Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1901, with a release date of January 17, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Russia's over-the-horizon radar returns to the ham radio bands. A federal appeals court throws out the FCC's definition of an open internet. The FT5ZM team is interviewed just before they depart for Amsterdam Island, and hams are asked to help the widow of a radio amateur who was murdered back in 2011. Find out how you might be able to assist on Amateur Radio Newsline's report number 1901, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is this week's report.
The just-released December 2013 issue of the IARU Region 1 Monitoring System electronic newsletter reports a new Russian over-the-horizon radar signal has been heard loud and clear in the 20-meter band. Wolfgang Hadl, DK2OM, is the International Amateur Radio Union's Region 1 Monitoring Service Coordinator. He says that the latest over-the-horizon radar signal was about 10 kilohertz wide when it was heard and recorded on 14.305, and that it kind of sounded a lot like the infamous Russian woodpecker radar system of days gone by. But that's not the only place the new woodpecker-like interference has been heard. Other reports say the latest incarnation of the Russian woodpecker has also shown up on 15 and 10 meters, making a pest of itself on those bands as well. And if that were not enough, DK2OM says that another growing problem out of Russia is the unchecked proliferation of taxicabs being heard on 10-meter FM. While he did not post any sound file on this one, he did put up a spectrum display photo taken on December 15th. It shows 10-meter contest activity between 28.0 and 28.55 megahertz, with many Russian taxicabs operating narrowband FM just above. All in all, not a very good situation for hams living in Europe and other nearby nations. You can download and read the full DK2OM report in the English language at tinyurl.com/the-woodpecker-returns. The document does require the free Adobe Acrobat or a similar PDF reader program to display text and photos. A three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia has unanimously vacated much of the FCC's open Internet order and remanded it back to the regulatory agency. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, has the details.
In its findings, the court said that although it rejects Verizon's challenge to the Open Internet Order's disclosure rules, it vacates both the anti-discrimination and the anti-blocking rules. It also concluded that because the FCC has not classified Internet service providers as common carriers, as such, it cannot regulate them as though they were. The court finding went on to say that the FCC's decision is so deficient as to raise serious doubts whether the agency can adequately justify its decision at all. It then remanded the matter back to the commission for further proceedings consistent with its opinion. Under current interpretation, the FCC considers the open Internet to be the Internet as we all know it. The agency contends that it's open because it uses free, publicly available standards that anyone can access and bill to. Also, that it treats all traffic that flows across the network in roughly the same way. The principle of the open Internet is sometimes referred to as net neutrality. Under this principle, consumers can make their own decisions about what applications and services to use and are free to decide what lawful content they want to access, create, or share with others. The FCC says that this openness promotes competition and enables investment and innovation. But the new ruling throws into confusion the efforts of the Federal Communications Commission to limit telecommunications and cable firms from discriminating against certain Internet traffic by slowing speeds, impeding access, or simply raising fees. If not appealed and overturned, it can lead to higher Internet access fees for many users. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, in New Orleans.
At this point, the FCC can appeal the decision to the full court or simply make changes suggested by that court finding. More on this decision and how it could affect your use of the Internet can be found on the web at tinyurl.com /no-open-internet. In DX Upfront, on the weekend of January 11th and 12th, Ono Benshoff, VK6FLAB, got to interview many of the members of the Amsterdam Island D-Expedition as they were ready to sail off to activate FT5ZM from Amsterdam Island. This is a DX community-funded operation with a $450,000 budget. It involves shipping 14 people to a spot in the Indian Ocean with radios, antennas, and computers, and then operating the station for 2 weeks. And how do you raise the level of funding needed for an operation this immense? That's one of the questions that VK6FLAB put to Bob Alphen, K4UEE.
The rule of thumb that I use is that the operator should be responsible for contributing, the operators in total should contribute about half of the total budget. And that's pretty much the way this one is going to work. The other half has got to come from the DX community. And basically, there's three sources: DX foundations, such as the Northern California DX Foundation, INDEXA, the International DX Association, German DX, and other foundations who primarily use their funds to support difficult and expensive expeditions. The second source of funds comes from the DX clubs themselves, the local clubs. And we probably have, at this point, 70 or 80 DX clubs who have made a contribution, some as small as $50 and others as much as $5,000. And then the third source of income is from the individual DXers themselves. And the truth of the matter is, when it's all said and done, the majority of the money comes from individual DXers who are donating anywhere from I guess the largest donation we've gotten from an individual is about $4,000.
Others interviewed include Bob Schenck, N2OO, Andy Chesnikov, UA3AB, and expedition leader Ralph Feeder, K0IR, to name only a few. The interviews range in length from about 4 to 17 minutes each and cover all aspects of the D-Expedition, from planning to building antennas, the computing infrastructure, the journey itself, working a pileup, and, of course, fundraising. All are in MP3 format and are licensed under Creative Commons and can be downloaded from tinyurl.com/amsterdam-island-sound. The latest information on the progress of the D-Expedition itself can be found online at www.amsterdamdx.org. And in a related item, the Ohio Penn DX newsletter reports that hams worldwide will be able to track and work the FT5ZM team on their journey to Amsterdam Island aboard the ship Braveheart. By the time you hear this newscast, the DXers should be well underway and operating Maritime Mobile with the call VK6FZM. You can keep an eye on their whereabouts at tinyurl.com/team-journey-live. If you make contact with VK6FZM Maritime Mobile, QSL via N200 direct or via the Bureau or electronically via Club Log. And we will have more DX news for you later on this week's newscast. Time to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including KH6HPZ, repeaters of the Hawaii State Races Net. Back in October 2011, Newsline reported the story of David Kiewit, N6DAC, who was one of 8 persons killed in a Los Angeles, California suburb by a mass shooter. Now his widow is in danger of losing her home. Newsline's Joe Mell, K0OV, has the story.
After he was murdered as he sat in his Range Rover outside a beauty salon in Seal Beach, the nightmare for his wife and family has never stopped. According to ABC TV News in Los Angeles, Kiewit was between jobs at the time. His family says he had temporary life insurance, but the company says he never signed the forms and is refusing to pay. Without that income, his wife has fallen behind on the mortgage, and it is nearing foreclosure. The family says that without more income, or someone to buy the mortgage and lease back the condo, she will lose her home. Donations are being accepted online at GoFundMe.com. Type the URL as one word, GoFundMe.com, then search that site for Seal Beach Shooting. Meanwhile, accused killer Scott Decry remains in county jail, segregated from other inmates for his own safety. According to the Orange County Register, deputies have had to pepper spray him at least once when he became disruptive. Trial for the 44-year-old was scheduled to start last November, but it has been delayed until March 24th of this year. From Orange County, California, this is Joe Mell, KZRO Oscar Victor for Amateur Radio Newsline.
At the time of his murder, news reports said that David Kiewit was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time and had no way to defend himself. The Orange County District Attorney's Office, which is prosecuting the case, claims that Decray walked out of a beauty salon where he is said to have methodically killed its staff and patrons, including his ex-wife, and then shot N6DAC, who was the driver of the vehicle that was simply parked next to him. Ham radio operators will once again support the Eagle Cap Extreme Sled Dog Race, to be held January 22nd to the 25th. It runs through the rugged Wallowa Mountains in northeastern Oregon. Radio amateurs will be providing the event with vital communications using a remote base and a pair of linked repeaters on VHF. There will also be a Winlink data connection on the high-frequency bands from the more remote checkpoints. This year, the race communications can be heard worldwide on the Doggone Echolink conference server, courtesy of the Dewdrop-In node. That's spelled Dawggone. Communications may also be heard on the Joseph Oregon repeater webpage at www.josephoregonweather.com. Just click on Joseph repeater link. Full information on the Eagle Cap Extreme Sled Dog Race is on the web at www.eaglecapextreme.com. Members of the Kiawatha County, Georgia's 4th CERT, or Community Emergency Response Team, graduating class were front and center at the January 7th meeting of the County Commission. Jay Jones is the Kiawatha County Emergency Management Agency Director. He says the county has trained 50 CERT team members in the past 2 years, with another class anticipated for the spring. He adds that the goal is to have CERT members in every major neighborhood in the county, formed to provide assistance in times of disaster and community emergencies. Members of the new CERT team are also licensed amateur operators. More about this story, complete with a photo of the new team members, is on the web at tinyurl.com/new-cert-team. Republican lawmakers are banding together to keep the Fairness Doctrine from being reborn. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, reports.
An FCC study looking into how news stories are chosen and reported has caught the eye of the Republican members of the Commerce Committee, who fear it may be an attempt to revive the Fairness Doctrine. In a recent letter to the FCC, the 16 lawmakers told the commission that by looking into how editorial decisions are made by local news outlets, the FCC is threatening their First Amendment rights. The study, called the Multi-Market Study of Critical Needs, plans to look at how broadcast, print, radio, and internet news stories are selected, prioritized, and produced. On its website, the FCC said the study looks at the information needs of the American public, with special emphasis on vulnerable and disadvantaged populations. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The Fairness Doctrine required broadcasters to give equal time to both sides of controversial issues of public importance. It was officially dismissed back in 2011. The Consumer Electronics Association, which sponsors the Las Vegas-based Consumer Electronics Show, says this year's CES hosted 3,200 exhibitors and covered a record 2 million net square feet of exhibit space. Also, there were about 150,000 attendees, of which some 35,000, or 23%, were from outside of the U.S. As to the technology shown, in general, the 2014 event featured devices that seamlessly marry technology and lifestyle in ways mainstream consumers can appreciate. Major trends at this year's show include wearable devices and 4K smart televisions. As to what would be of interest to ham radio operators, shortwave listeners, and other electronics hobbyists, Gordon West, WB6NOA, was there and covered this in episode 130 of the TWIT TV program Ham Nation. You can see and hear it on the web at twit.tv/hn. After some 30 years in Bellevue, Washington, ICOM America has relocated to new and substantially larger headquarters not too far away. Their new address is 12421 Willows Road Northeast, Kirkland, Washington, 98034. All communications should be sent only to the new address. The main phone number is still 1-800-USA-ICOM, which translates to 1-800-872-4266. And of course, their website remains at icomamerica.com. Another change in the hobby radio publishing market. This with word that Antique Radio Classified magazine will resume publishing with the February 2014 issue, but as a hybrid publication. According to an announcement on its website, Antique Radio Classified will be published monthly as an online magazine, with a print edition to be mailed out quarterly. This means that, effective immediately, a one-year subscription will consist of 12 monthly online issues and 4 printed quarterly issues. The monthly online issues will remain unchanged at 52 pages. The printed quarterly issues will mirror the previous 3 months of online issues and include all articles and columns. The next print edition will be made up of the February, March, and April 2014 issues. Antique Radio Classified says that all current subscribers will receive the number of monthly print issues that they are subscribed for. Like other publications that have taken to electronic publication, Antique Radio Classified says that these changes are necessary due to increased cost in printing and postage. More on the web at www.antiqueradio.com. As an aside, hybrid magazine is a relatively new term being used to describe publications that are using both paper and electronic distribution. Turning to the ham radio social scene, word that the 22nd annual contest dinner will be held in conjunction with the Dayton Hamvention and will take place on Saturday night, May 17th. The venue will be the Presidential Ballroom of the Crown Plaza Hotel in downtown Dayton, Ohio. This year's Master of Ceremonies will be Contest Hall of Fame member John Doerr, K1AR. Doug Grant, K1DG, who is the co-chairman of WRTC 2014, will be the featured speaker. Tickets for the 2014 contest dinner are on sale exclusively via the web at contestdinner.com. Retired Canadian astronaut Chris Hadfield, VA3OOG, is calling for more cooperation with China in future space exploration. He also says that he wants this cooperation to be part of the international effort to return to the moon. In a recent interview with the Canadian press, Hadfield noted that China sent its first astronaut into space in 2003, and that its ambitious space program aims to eventually put an astronaut on the moon. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/Hadfield-on-China. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. A just-concluded ham radio operation honoring South Africa's late President Nelson Mandela was a true on-the-air memory to the man known to his countrymen as Madiba. Amateur Radio Newsline welcomes our new South Africa correspondent, David Conradi, ZR6DHC. David has the story on this very special commemorative station.
ZS9 Madiba, the special event call sign that commemorates the life of former South African President Nelson Mandela, obtained a Worked All States Award within the first 2 weeks of going on the air, which is a remarkable achievement. The call sign is also close to achieving a DXCC in all the modes of operations. That includes a single sideband, CW and digital. At the time of compiling this report, ZS9 Madiba had achieved 12,846 QSO records with a confirmed 4,370 QSL records. The DXCC mode status is as follows: mixed 93, CW 80, phone 65, and digital 65. If there was an award for the most enthusiastic radio amateur, it would go to Tienus ZS2 Echo Charlie. Tienus just keeps on going day and night. Well done to you, Tienus. A special word of thanks also to Roger ZS6 Romeo Juliet. His tally of contacts says it all. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm David Conradi, Zulu Romeo 6 Delta Hotel Charlie.
Nelson Mandela passed away last December 5th at age 95. ZS9 Madiba concluded its operation on January 11th. For more information and a final QSO count, please visit www.sarl.org.za. Dmitry Pashkov, 4B4UAD, reports transmissions have begun in the 70-centimeter band from a pair of Russian ASAT microsatellites. ASAT-2 was launched last April 19th. It operates on 435.215 MHz. Its companion ASAT-1 transmits on 435.265 MHz. It rode to orbit on December 28th. Until now, no signals have been reported from microsats in the amateur bands, but since January 3rd, both of the tiny birds have been transmitting a New Year's greetings on the 435 MHz frequencies. Four new CubeSats are now on board the International Space Station after being carried to the orbiting outpost on January 9th by an Orbital Sciences Antares launch vehicle and Cygnus space freighter. The four ham radio birds are named Litwinika Sat 1, Litsat 1, Ardusat 2, and UAP Sat 1. Litwinika Sat 1 carries a 145 to 435 MHz FM transponder, while Litsat 1 is thought to be a 435 to 145 MHz linear transponder for single sideband and CW communications. It's expected that CubeSats will be deployed from the International Space Station in the coming months, but no specific dates of deployment are known as we go to air. On the air, the Tampa, Florida Amateur Radio Club will be hosting special event station W4G on January 24th to the 25th. This to celebrate the 110th anniversary of the invasion and a parade in honor of the 19th century pirate Jose Gasper. Operation of W4G will be on 40 through 10 meters using single sideband and CW. The latter between 25 to 50 kilohertz from the bottom of general class portions of each band. Operating hours will be 12 noon to 6 p.m. on January 24th and 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. on parade day, January 25th. More information can be found on the web at www.hamclub.com. In DX, F5GN is now on the air from Martinique, signing Stroke FM. His XYL F4BMR will join him and be active as TO4YL between February 8th and the 24th. Their operations will be on 160 through 10 meters, QSL via F5FGN. Lastly, several sources are reporting that M0RCX will be active stroke 3B8 from Mauritius sometime around May 2nd and the 28th. Listen out for him on 40 through 6 meters. Modes mentioned are digital plus some CW, QSL via M0RCX, direct via the Bureau, or electronically using EQSL. And finally this week, word that a living legend, New York-based radio personality Cousin Bruce Morrow, is combining new technology with his historic career. Our producer Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, grew up in the Big Apple and has the details.
That's right, Hal. Actually, I grew up in the borough of Brooklyn and can well remember Bruce Morrow from his days at WINS and later at WABC AM. This was during the era of the top 40 playlist, when a career as a disc jockey was considered as being almost royalty on the AM broadcast band. And one of the masters of the top 40 format is Bruce Morrow, or Cousin Brucey, as he is known to all of us from the Big Apple. Cousin Brucey is still on the air, but nowadays he is heard on Sirius XM satellite radio several times a week, and in the recent telephone interview he told us how satellite distribution has changed radio.
I never thought, 40 years ago or even more, that I'd be reaching just about this whole world via satellite. I'm getting calls from the Ukraine and then the Philippines, besides obviously the United States and all over Canada and a great deal of Central America. But now we're getting all over the world, and this satellite thing is just an amazing phenomenon. And the density is amazing. It just gets better and better every month.
And now it's been announced that Cousin Brucey will do one of his shows live from the 2014 Fest for Beatles Fans in New York. We asked how it came about.
The idea of doing it on satellite radio is fabulous. I do a lot of remotes. I do my San Gennaro Feast, which brings it to the nation, which is a New York phenomenon. I've been Memphis, Tennessee, and Graceland several times, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So this technology affords me the opportunity to reach a huge audience.
The fest is being held at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in Manhattan and runs from February 7th to the 9th. Cousin Brucey's satellite show will be on February 8th between 6 and 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Sirius XM and will be a special celebration of sorts. This is because it was Cousin Brucey who emceed the Beatles' famous Shea Stadium concert way back in 1965. And he tells us that he plans on having some very special guests with him to help listeners relive the past.
We have Ronnie Spector coming down, who had quite a bit to do with the Beatles. We have Peter Asher. Donovan's going to be joining me, Chad and Jeremy, and Billy J. Kramer, and several other of the stars that were involved personally with the Beatles. So it should be quite an interesting show. And the people will be on the air, all relating their Beatles stories. And you know who's going to have the best time of all? Me. Me. Because I'm having a great time doing what I love to do and talking about the Beatles. What could be better?
As anyone in radio will tell you, having a good time and enjoying every moment is the main reason that they chose a career behind the mic. And in this area of life, there are none better than New York's Cousin Brucey. Reminiscing the past, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, some 3,000 miles away from home, here in the City of Angels.
For anyone who loves the Beatles and the Top 40 radio era, this will be an event that you will not want to miss. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, RSGV, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@newsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Hal Rogers, K8CMD, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014. All rights reserved.